Hey, before we get started here, if you are a repeat listener, can you do me a quick favor and rate and review the show right now? We're really making a push to get great guests on the show, and your reviews help us attract the very best guests. So if you could do that, I would really appreciate it. Now let's dive into the show.
Go find a company that's doing a great job, that's got a great reputation, you know, well-capitalized, and go there and work for them for 2 years or 3 years or whatever, and learn everything you can.
Hey guys, David Robinson here. Welcome to the Lead Sponsor Podcast. Another great episode for you today. I've got Sam Hales with the Saratoga Group joining me today. Sam is a private equity real estate fund manager with $300 million in assets under management. He's also the founder of Saratoga Group. Saratoga Group focuses on mobile home parks and RV park communities, and mainly in the Southeast markets. Value add, he has two funds that he's deployed, a total of 6,100 lots across 17 different states and 97 different communities. He started Saratoga Group about 5 years ago, and like I said, focuses on value add mobile home parks and RV parks. So really enjoyed the conversation that I had with Sam today, learning about his background and how he transitioned from single family investing through a fund that sourced almost all of their equity from Chinese investors to then pivoting to the mobile home park and RV space and starting his own fund, going off on his own and starting from scratch, raising equity from his own private investors, and how he's grown his business over the years, how he focuses on long-term buy and hold without any real desire to exit, really more looking to recapitalize the equity and reposition the equity that he has in his assets versus selling. And we ask him about his predictions for the next 12 months as far as the economy and the market is concerned, as well as is his most critical role in his business and why that role is the most critical to his success. And so really enjoyed the conversation I had with Sam today and hope you will as well. Without further ado, Mr. Sam Hales. All right, Mr. Sam Hales, welcome to the Lead Sponsor Podcast. Appreciate you coming on.
David, thanks so much. Appreciate you having me.
So if you don't mind, let's start off. Tell us about your business as it is today. What's Saratoga Group all about? How is it structured? What do you guys focus on? All that good stuff.
Awesome. So we're 100% focused on buying mobile home parks and RV parks. They're closely associated, but 95% of our business is mobile home parks. We're very much in the value add space, and we're pretty focused on like the Southeast part of the US. We do also some in the Midwest over through like Texas. So anyway, that's our business. We raise money from basically high net worth investors, some family offices, and we buy and turn around mobile home parks. We've got about 6,100 lots, and we're in 17 different states at this point.
Okay. And you mentioned mainly the Southeast. Are you in a handful of different states there? What does that geographic footprint look like?
Yeah, probably almost all of them. So we're like Carolinas, Georgia, Alabama, Florida, Tennessee. We're not in Louisiana or Mississippi. Alabama's pretty big for us. Kentucky, and then you know, Texas, and then like I said, some Midwestern states as well.
Got it. And those 61 lots, how
six,
many?
6,100.
Six, yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, 6,100 lots across how many different assets?
That's 97 communities. Okay. So.
Yeah. Right. And then as far as business structure, you're at the helm. Do you have other principals in the business with you, employees? Do you have any integrated businesses inside of Saratoga Group?
Yeah, we'll hit on the integrated businesses first, just because we kind of knew when we got into this space, which is about 5 years ago, we were doing single family and some other stuff before, that you had to be vertical, at least to do the kind of stuff we were doing, like heavy turnaround and like roll up your sleeves. And so we right away created our own management company. So we self-manage everything. And then we're actually in the process of creating our own construction company. I can talk more about that. I never thought I'd own a construction company, but we're already in process there and doing some projects. So that's kind of how we're set up. Corporate ownership, it is me, but I have, you know, very key people that get profits interest in the company, our COO and CFO, and you know, the main positions you'd think of that are critical for the business. Yeah.
Okay, great. And so we've got 6,100 lots across 17 different states and 97 different communities. Just give us a rough estimate of value of the total portfolio at this point.
Roughly value is about $350 million.
Great. And you mentioned that you really started getting serious about this mobile home park space and RV park space about 5 years ago, correct?
Yeah. I was in the single family space. We raised some money there, done, you know, kind of after the Great Recession, bought a bunch of homes in California. That's where we were, that's where I was living. That was kind of where we were headquartered before, and did that for a few years. And then that's a business. I mean, you've either got to get some pretty big scale or build some pretty complicated systems, because it's very inefficient to own a bunch of homes all, kind of scattered all over the place.
Well, let's sort of talk about that journey then. Let's back up. Let me push the limits of your memory here and take you back. Like, what's your background? You're well educated, so maybe let's start there and take us forward from there.
Okay, so graduated undergrad was chemical engineering. From BYU, down the road from you. And it was like my senior year, I realized I do not want to be a chemical engineer. and part of it was just like the jobs and like where you'd have to live. And so I went into an engineering company, but kind of like in a sales business development route. So started doing that and then bought my first house kind of coming out of college. And I was hooked. I was like, man, you know, I'm working during the day. At night, we're like pulling up carpets, refinishing floors. You know what I mean? The house hack thing, I guess, before it was called that. And just saw that, hey, this is an interesting way to create value. And I enjoyed it. So we started just, you know, buying a house here or there as we could scrape the money together. And then I went to business school. And I, at that point, I'd done a number of different real estate projects. And so a classmate and I decided to start a fund. He was from China, had Chinese companies over there that were looking to put money in the US, and we put a fund together and started buying houses. So like
rough,
I said,
rough time frame, just for context, you got out of school and started buying real estate with a partner, roughly what time frame?
That was 2010.
Okay. So this is after the recession. You guys saw an opportunity to get in and be aggressive about buying distressed, or at this point, 2010, we pretty much bottomed out and maybe it started to recover at that point, right?
It was still pretty distressed. I mean, there was a little more liquidity in the market, but it was pretty close to the bottom.
Okay. There.
So it was a good time to jump in.
And prior to, you know, formulating this partnership and going out and systematically buying property, single family in 2010, what had aside from, you know, your house hacking and starting to buy a couple, what did your, you know, real estate holdings look like at that point in time? I mean, you're pretty young at that stage, but what did that look like for you?
Yeah. I mean, it was just a few homes. That was it.
Okay.
I think I was partnering a couple parcels, land development. So I've done a bit of land development as well, but that's it really, you know, not that much experience.
Yeah. So what was it about this? What was it with this partner, a classmate of yours? I mean, MBA from Wharton, you could go any direction, right? What was it about this business model or this business plan of getting into the single family space that appealed to you guys at that point in time?
So from the very beginning, I was pretty focused on cash flow. And so didn't know what was going to happen with home prices. Certainly couldn't have envisioned like what has happened over the last, you know, 12 years or whatever since then, in terms of pricing. But it's like, well, hey, we can buy this house in Oakland and unlevered, we can make 15% cash on cash. What's not like, let's scale this thing. Let's do this. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, whatever happens with the prices, like they could stay the same. We don't care. Like if we can, yeah, make that kind of cash flow and at some point, you know, we're buying them with cash, but we figure, hey, at some point we're going to be able to kind of lever up. And then all of a sudden the cash flows look incredible. So that was just kind of the thesis, yeah, behind it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, how did things evolve from there?
So we had a 5-year fund there. And so as we're starting to, you know, get towards the back end, starting to sell assets off, I was really looking for two things. Number one, like I mentioned, efficiency, like something I could scale a little easier. There were certainly groups, and we knew these groups like Waypoint and Blackstone with Invitation Homes, and they had scaled the business, but like the dedication and the investment in the infrastructure and the technology there, mm-hmm, was out of reach for us. I mean, you really need to be doing 1,000 homes or more. So anyway, so I was looking for efficiency, and a lot of that had to do with location, like, you know, being able to go to one spot and hit 100 tenants instead of one. and then the other thing is I was looking for something that would do well in a downturn. Mm. It's kind of funny to me now, like to think back 2016, and I was thinking about a downturn. It's like, I mean, that was, you know, the next 5-6 years were incredible, right? But I think we all recognize that we're probably a little long in the tooth there for a while. So, that led me to mobile home parks, and some research I did indicating that, gosh, even through like the dot-com bust and the Great Recession, mobile home parks, at least the publicly traded REITs, continued to grow in profit every single quarter since they've been listed in like 1998. I think they were both listed. So that was super appealing for me, and it made sense. It's like, okay, this is housing. It's affordable, and it's kind of, hey, when things get bad, people still need a place to live, creates actually more demand on the more affordable housing. And then the other thing that we've seen there is just as prices go up, like we've seen an increase in our homes and what they cost coming from the factory, but in real dollars, we've gone up $15,000 since 3 years ago. Mm. I mean, we could pay for that by going from a 10-year contract to a 12-year contract with our client. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
So it just kind of a gap in affordability has become even greater since we've gotten into the business.
And so roughly 2010, you start on this single family track. You have the fund. It was a 5-year fund. You start to liquidate what you had in the fund. And did you take that down to zero? Did you exchange into mobile home parks? Did you bring your partner with you as you transitioned into mobile home parks? What did that transition period look like for you?
Yeah, you know, it was an interesting transition. And when you asked earlier about kind of how we're constructed, you'll notice I didn't say anything about a partner. And
yeah,
and that was certainly intentional. The partnership was fine. Our experience there was that working with the Chinese capital a little bit, it's political. And so if somebody new comes in to a leadership position over there, they'll want to change what they're doing. And so here we are, we're like executing on this business plan, and 2 years in, you know, it's like, hey, we're doing something different. It's like, well guys, like we're already like deployed here. Like we got contracts with these people. Like, what do you mean we're doing something different? So I wanted to have more control over, hey, here's the business plan. Let's stick to it. We'll be more successful if we can do that. And so the transition was basically going from having a partner and having capital lined up to me going to my friends and family first, right? And then raising capital, building a track record. And then it's kind of grown from there.
So that's pretty cool. That's an interesting story in that would you say the vast majority, if not all the capital, was Chinese capital on that first fund?
It was. Yeah.
Okay.
It was 100%. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. All right. And so your first experience in really raising equity on your end of things started when you transitioned to the mobile home park space.
That's right. Yeah. I was the operating partner. my classmate was the money partner, you know, capital raiser. So it was kind of like that's right. We always hear about partnerships, and there's great things and there's hard things. And one of the hard things is, you know, I'm sitting there doing all the operational work. I'm like, well, this is the hard part, right? And he's probably thinking, well, bringing the money to the table is the hard part. And so, you know, and I'm like, I can do that. I can raise the money. I know and you know this is it better than I do, but really the value is in operating. Like if you're a good operator, there's plenty of people that have capital that wanna, you know, put it into good investments and with an operator that can execute. So.
Yeah. I agree with that 100%. I believe that you can raise equity once and be a poor operator, but you won't raise equity again from those same investors if you're a poor operator.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, that's right.
All right, cool. Well, let's take the conversation forward a little bit and let's talk about what you're focused on moving forward. I mean, you've built up a significant portfolio of mobile home parks, you know, 6,100 lots, 17 different locations, 97 different communities. What are the biggest challenges that you are facing right now in your business that we could all learn from?
There's a lot of challenges. I would say number one is simply being able to really create value in these communities. And I'm when I say that, I'm taking that from the perspective of the resident that lives here. Mm. If they find value in what's there, then you're not going to have a problem filling the park up. You're not going to have a problem with retention. And so part of that is like, you know, let me paint a picture. Let me back up, David. Like if I paint a picture of like our typical acquisition, it would be called a trailer park. And what I mean by that is like the roads are beat up. There's hitches on all the fronts of the homes. There's probably a couple lots where there's trash in the yards. Some of the yards aren't mowed. You kind of get the image. And so our perspective is our business plan is going to, you know, it's got to make sense economically for us. So we're going to, you know, we're going to raise rents over time. We're going to bring brand new homes in over time, that sort of thing. But the very first thing we want to do is we want to go and we want to clean up that community, get out any bad apples. That's often, we call it the J curve. Like occupancy kind of goes down at first because we're like, we're getting out the people that really detract from the community, that make it so the people we want to move in don't want to move in yet. Anyway, that's the hardest part though. That's the most challenging part. A big part of that is finding a good community manager that buys into the vision and is willing to be there on the ground and slog it out, because it's not easy. And we're in 17 different states, like I just mentioned. So it's like, how do you do that all if it's kind of scattered? We certainly visit the communities, but we use a lot of technology to make sure we're getting eyes on the ground every week. And we have lots of metrics and KPIs that they're responsible for, and they get compensated based on performance. So we kind of try to wrap all that together and make it work, but it's challenging.
And as far as community managers are concerned, are you finding someone that's on site in the community to fill that role? Are you going outside of that?
It's a combination. We love to have somebody that's in the community that's because then they're there always. And there's a little more, like if you can create that, it's their community, right? It's not just, hey, I'm going to work. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, I live here also. So, and I would say probably it's over half of our communities. So maybe it's 60% or 65% have community managers that live on site. And the others are maybe coming in from offsite. A lot of times, even the community managers that are offsite though, lived on site previously and maybe, you know, with a good job and commissions they make from us, they go buy a house out of the community, but they're still tied in till it's still integrated.
Yeah. Understood. So as far as technology is concerned, you mentioned, you know, trying to integrate technology to help with the management burden. What does that look like? Is there anything in particular that's, you know, new or on the horizon, or, you know, maybe it's some obvious stuff that's helping you to manage a geographic footprint across 17 different states?
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, we could spend, David, we could spend some time on this, but it would mean me screen sharing, and you know what I mean? Like,
Sure,
but
sure.
let me just kind of tell you how it's structured. So unfortunately, like in the mobile home park space, we don't have a lot of the same really robust tools that multifamily has. And so sometimes you'll take that multifamily solution and it's like the square hole in the round peg. We've built our own tech stack. I mean, we use Rent Manager for our property management. They have an auto pay that can where people can walk into Walmart, they can pay their rent. They get a specific account number, which is kind of cool because a lot of our residents maybe don't have a bank account or different things like, I mean, sometimes. And so for them, they just want to go pay cash. So and either that or they're doing online payment. Like we don't take checks, we don't take any of that. They either have to pay at Walmart or pay online. And then so there's some of those standard tools, and then we're built on the Google Suite platform, and we've got somebody working in the company, very good programmer, and has basically built, like, has the API from Rent Manager and has built these tools that allow us to pull out and look at all our inventory for like the homes, what needs to be done to get this home ready, how long has this been on the market, get it filled, auto contracts, so like somebody can walk into one of our sales offices and look at a home and say, "Hey, I want to buy it, and we've got money." The manager can basically go to the website, click the contract. It knows which state they're in, puts in all the specific state language. They fill it out. Hey, here's how many residents, and here's the kids' names. It auto generates it, puts it in their e-sign for them. And they walk out of there in 15 minutes, signed contract. We took a check, or well, they have to go pay cash, right, at the Walmart. But anyway, and that can, we're in 17 different states. Like, how else are we going to manage making sure, oh crap, like you were supposed to have them sign this specific language for Nebraska that's not in any of the other states, but we automate as much as we can.
Yeah, interesting. So you mentioned integrating property management, vertically integrating property management and construction. Maybe we'll touch on construction here in a minute, but let's talk about property management for the moment. Like, has that been out the gate? You had an integrated property management arm, or was that something that early on you relied on third-party property management and then brought in-house? What did that look like for you?
Hey, real quick, before we get back to the show. If you and I haven't connected yet, head on over to canovocapital.com and subscribe to my investor network. From there, my team will be in touch to schedule a brief call. I'd love to connect with you and learn more about your investing goals, what you're working on, what you're looking to do in the future, and also let you know about some of the projects we're working on over at Canovo Capital. So go down into the show notes right now and click on the link, or just head on over to canovocapital.com and subscribe to my network there. And I look forward to connecting with you. Let's get back to the show.
So it was right out of the gate. In fact, it kind of went the other way a little bit where we built up this property management arm. One of the operators that we love to just talk shop with other, like I kind of all organize like these mastermind classes, and we all get together on a call and like, what are you doing about this? What are you doing about that? And we're just, because again, there's not a ton of robust tools in our space. But anyway, one of them was like, this was a year ago. He's like, well, I'm using this third party group, and here's how it's going. I'm like, I think we should try it. Let's try them. So we gave him some parks in one geography. It did not go well. So we had to cancel that contract, took those back in October, so just last month. So we from the jump, we were completely in-house and really built up that team, and it was good for us to kind of try that out and test the water and realize, yeah, we're not doing things perfectly, which is obviously why we wanted to see if they could help us. But it turns out we're doing it way better than at least what was recommended to us for a third-party manager. So,
And have you do you manage any other communities for other operators or only your own assets?
only our own. We again, I don't. If we were trying to do it for other people, I feel like it'd be a distraction at this point. Maybe someday, but at this point, and it's going to be interesting, David, because there's a lot of what I call non-operational capital that's come into the space. and they're probably going to need some help here in a year or two. So maybe at that point, we're not, our hair's not on fire and we're not, you know, still working super hard like we are right now on all these communities. And we can kind of look at doing something like that.
Well, I think this is a good point for us to transition, do a little mini case study on a recent acquisition of yours. You had this 270 unit mobile home park in Greenville, North Carolina. Let's talk about that. If you don't mind, let's start off by just describe for us the asset, the community, what it consisted of, and how you sourced the deal.
Awesome. Yeah, a lot of... You might have to remind me if I miss any of those questions, but everyone you just mentioned, I'm like, oh yeah. So there's a good part to that story too.
Just describe the community for us to start off.
So 270 spaces. This is the north side of Greenville, North Carolina, not to be confused with Greenville, South Carolina. We also own parks there. Greenville, North Carolina, we own 1,000 pads in that market. So that's our biggest single market. And this particular community was 30-something percent occupied when we bought it. It's right across the street from Thermo Fisher, which interestingly, when I was in the tech world, was one of my customers. But anyway, right across the street from Thermo Fisher and then another manufacturing company. So there's like 1,000 people working directly across the street. And it's at a busy intersection. It's like basically two highways that come together. So you look at this, you're like 35%, you know, or 33% occupancy. Like what in the world? Like what's going on here? But it's very similar to the story that we often see. It's in this case, it was the son of the original developer. Over time, it had been full at one point, but over time people had moved out, whatever, a home was older, they never replaced it. And they just kind of keep milking the cow without reinvesting back into the community because, you know, maybe they didn't have a loan. I can't remember in this case. I don't think they did. Most of the sellers we have, they don't have a loan on the property. And so whatever revenue it's generating is kind of like, hey, this is all right. You know, this month we have $15,000 to live on and next month, you know, so if they take that money and dump it back into like more homes or new homes, then, you know, that's just not how they think about it. So that was kind of the state of it. Roads were in bad shape. Lot rents were low. They were like $200 a month.
And are these tenant-owned homes or is it a combination of tenant-owned and park-owned?
So it's a combination of tenant and park-owned, although more of them are park-owned. So and I can't remember the exact percentages at this point, but there were more park-owned homes and tenant-owned homes. And we, you know, our model is we don't want to own those homes. Because a person that owns their own home is a better resident. They're a better member of the community. And also over time, the amount of money you have to kind of put back into the homes and that sort of thing, a lot more turnover. So at this point I was going to pull it up here, but yeah, I mean, most of those homes have now been sold to the residents. We brought in about 50 new homes so far that have also been filled. I know we have another 57 on order delivery in Q1 of 2023. So it's kind of, it takes a little while to kind of stabilize and that sort of thing. But now we're definitely on that, the ramp up the other side and exciting to kind of see it coming together.
And just for context, when did you buy this community?
We bought it 2 years ago.
Okay. Okay. And how did you source it originally? I know that it was, you know, the son of the original developer, but how did you connect with that? Do you have a team that's out there searching for, you know, these type of opportunities? What does that look like?
So yeah, we do have both some technology and somebody helping us out with, you know, calling owners, that sort of thing. But this is our favorite. Our favorite is a broker who is in the market and knows all the sellers, but doesn't know buyers because basically, so there's brokerages out there that they're national. And so if they put something up for sale, they've got 2,000 people in their database. I'm one of them and we all see it. And then it's a feeding frenzy. I mean, maybe it's less of a feeding frenzy now than it was 6 months ago. Right. Mm-hmm. Uh, But still, there's still a lot of interest. And so in this case, the local broker, I ended up calling him about something. It was just listed on like the local MLS. And I can't remember how we found it exactly, but I call him and I'll never forget the conversation. Cause he's like, man, I'm so glad you called. He's like, I have all these people that want to sell a trailer park and I don't know anybody that wants to buy one. And I'm like, Rem, we are going to be really good friends and you are going to make a lot of money. Okay. Here's how this is going to work. And so, and like I said, this is our biggest market now. So we just told him, hey, we're paying your commission. Let's go sit on front porches with these older folks and let's put deals together. And you can tell them they don't have to pay you a dime because we'll pay you. And so that's what we did. And we ended up, every single deal we bought there is from him. And it's 11 of them at this point.
Interesting. And
like I said, he made a pile of money and it's created a lot of value for us as well.
Okay. And how did you structure this deal? Do you function as a fund or one-off syndications? How do you structure the equity side of things?
So we initially started doing, you know, individual deals, but we're basically structured as a fund now. Okay. So that property is part of actually an opportunity zone fund. So we do some OZ, some non-OZ, but that one's part of an opportunity zone fund.
Okay. And how did you structure the debt and the equity?
So the debt on that, we used Five Star Bank out of California. Like I said, I was located there before. So even though we were buying stuff in different parts of the country, they were good to kind of go to these markets with us. And I remember, so purchase price was $3.3 million. I think the total was around $2.5 million or $2.6 million that they would loan. But $850,000was an earnout. So we really only got about 50% loan to value going in. And that's, you know,
is that typical mobile home park is about 50%?
Well, it's typical in the kind of stuff we buy. Mm-hmm. So we'll usually get 50 to as much as 70. Mm-hmm. And that's okay. We're not, to us, I mean, obviously equity is expensive or whatever, but it's really about the turnaround. It's really about the operation. Like if we do that stuff, I mean, it kind of doesn't matter much. Everybody will be successful. So we don't need a lot of leverage to make it happen.
What kind of rate and terms do you have on mobile home park of this, you know, description?
Well, do you want the rates from a year ago? You want today's rates?
Well, that's a great point. I mean, 2 years ago. Yeah, let's talk about what it was 2 years ago. And then let's talk about real quick, just give us some insight into what that looks like today, what the debt market looks like for mobile home parks today.
Yeah, no, happy to do it. So most of the debt that we have was, you know, on these 6,100 pads was obviously over the last few years and is in the 4.5 to 5.25 range.
Okay.
But again, you know, we weren't pushing the envelope on leverage and that sort of thing. So you could certainly pay a little more and get some more leverage or whatever. And then today, those same rates are high 6s to 8. Mm. So, I mean, we're easily, you know, 200, 250 bips over what we were doing before.
Okay.
It makes it challenging.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I was just saying that makes the acquisitions challenging, but we can talk a little more about that.
Yeah. So what was the strategy with this purchase? What was the game plan and where's it at today?
So strategy was real similar to kind of what we, you know, are doing on all these is there's kind of three levers that we're looking to pull. One of them is occupancy. And so we've moved in about 50 to 60 new residents so far. Got another 60 homes coming Q1. So by the end of next year, we'll be, you know, 85 to 90% occupied there. So that's one lever. Another one is bringing rents to market. And that was another thing that really interested us about Greenville, North Carolina, is that there was a huge disconnect between what the lot rents were and what the apartment rents were. And so and we look at those metrics, but the lot rents were less than $200 a month, in a market, and I'm trying to remember the numbers now, but I think at the time it was around 1100 for a 3-bedroom apartment. Hmm. It's now 15 something. And so even then, even before we had this rapid increase in rents, we looked at it and said, this is a $400 a month market. It just, so the competition isn't Billy Bob's mobile home park down the street. It's because there's not that many of them. It's really the apartments. And so we're at this point, for 2023, we're looking at our rent increases, but it'll be, and hopefully this doesn't sound egregious, but it'll be another 15 to 20%. Cause I mean, we're still chasing the market, and that'll put us in the high threes at this point. And we still have probably another 15 to 20% change going the next year as well. So it's meaningful. It's meaningful.
Yeah. Well, thanks for giving us some detail about that particular deal. I'm curious, portfolio wide, what's the end game with what you're doing with Saratoga Group? What does this thing look like? What's the strategy? Is it buy and hold long term, pass it on to the kids? Is it sell off to, another private equity firm or a REIT, or is it, going public? What does this thing look like?
Man, there's a lot of interesting options you just gave me there, David. Yeah. I mean, so generally it's very much the plan is to hold on for the long term. And there's a couple reasons for that. Number one, our investors want that. So feedback we get a lot is like, hey, Sam, I just got out of this deal and it was 18 months and it made a 35% IRR. And now I've been sitting here for 12 months and I can't find another deal. Well, your IRR might not be 35% in that case.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. So basically our business plan is we want to, within 5 years, get investors all their equity back. They maintain their ownership shares, right? And and then after that, it's like we just quarterly dividend, quarterly check. There's like, we do a 10-year pro forma, like our funds are basically 10 years. Oh, really? And even on the 10-year pro forma, there's all sorts of things that don't show up there that are very accretive to the business and to the financial performance. I'll just give you one example. We're just starting to roll this out is in fact, Greenville, North Carolina is where we're starting because we've got more scale there. We're doing carports. And a carport makes the community look nicer. I mean, it's not a garage, but it really dresses up the driveway. It dresses up the look of the community. And people would like that. They'd like to be able to not just park out under the sun and have birds crapping on their car and all the rest of it. And so, but a lot of times they can't afford the $3,000. So we're going to go put it on a payment plan for them. And, might make 8 or 10% or whatever on kind of doing that. In the meantime, it makes the community look better, makes the residents stickier, right? I mean, it's just kind of a win-win-win. And so there's just things like that. We don't underwrite, but we've always had in our mind, and there's other examples I could give you that, hey, we can add these sorts of things. And if we hold it 10 years and 15 years, like we'll continue to make these properties better. If we sell it, then we got to go do the hard part all over again.
Yeah.
I mean, we're doing the hard part now and it's all right. But I can't wait because we've got, some of these communities, like they're stabilized and you're just collecting rent. And it's like, oh man, I can't wait till all our communities are like those communities. So I don't want to do it all over again.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah. Love that game, a long-term, game plan mindset and repositioning the equity in the deal, getting creative about how you reposition that equity down the road. That's great.
Yeah.
Well, we've got to start winding down here. I want to be respectful of your time, but I've got a few final questions that I've got for you. The first is, we're recording mid, late November here. What's your prediction for the real estate market over the next 12 months? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but right, what you're seeing on the ground, what do you expect over the next 12 months?
Yeah. Like you said, it's hard to know, but just from what we're seeing so far, I have a feeling it's going to be a lot harder to get inflation under control. And so I think we've got elevated interest rates with us for a long time. And I think because of that, this pricing discovery that hasn't happened yet in the market is going to happen and prices are going to be lower. And so we're kind of excited about that because like it doesn't actually, for our existing stuff, it actually doesn't matter. Mm. In other words, we're not selling anyway, but even if we were, if we execute on our business plan, it doesn't matter if the cap rates went from a 5 to a 6, which is meaningful, right? If you're, but right. if we just grew NOI, like I was telling you about, and it grew by 20%, it's like, well, like that's in the noise a little bit. Yeah. So anyway, so we see it as a great opportunity to have some dry powder and go out there and be aggressive and also get terms. So we're negotiating a couple mm-hmm. deals right now where sellers that we've talked to before and we've been in conversations with, sometimes these sellers take a while. All of a sudden they're like, okay, yeah, we see what's going on. We're ready to sell. And by the way, hey, we'll give you seller financing because we know it's hard to get a loan right now. And they'll give it at 5% or, you know, I mean, just things like this. So I think it's going to take a little while, but I think we're going to see prices. And I'm, of course, talking mobile home parks because that's what I know best, but sure. I'm sure it's similar for multifamily and other things like that.
If you were advising a son or a daughter on the best way to get into commercial real estate investing, what would your guiding thoughts to them be?
I would recommend that they do something way different than what I did.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I've run across people and I tell them like how I got there and they're like, wow, like that's a journey, man. Like from tech to, you know, engineering and all this crap, like, and you finally made it to commercial real estate. And even when I was doing single family, I was, you know, is that commercial? Yeah. I mean, we had a fun, but it was, no, it kind of wasn't. And so it took it. So what I would recommend is go find a company that's doing a great job, that's got a great reputation, you know, well capitalized, and go there and work for them for 2 years or 3 years or whatever, and learn everything you can. Mm. And if I had done that, it would completely short circuited like my whole experience here, which is fine because I there's probably things I learned sure. that I wouldn't have if I'd done it a different way. But that's what I would recommend. Like, yeah. And that's the same thing I'd tell myself if I was, the other thing is I wouldn't have done chemical engineering. Like I would have done accounting or finance or something, but anyway, that's a whole nother story.
What's the most, outside of your role, what's the most critical role in your business today?
That's easy. That's our COO. So, you know, operations, it's really about it. Mobile home parks are more like a business than they are like owning commercial real estate. So more than any, like I mentioned, we're really, really, really digging in. It's really about processes and it's about consistency and it's about rules and regulations and just making sure everybody's trained well, follows the processes. Once we get all that in place and everybody and, you know, residents and the manager alike understand how it's going to work and it's going to be that way next week and a year from now, and then it becomes easy and it is more like real estate and you can kind of focus on the real estate part, but that's easily. And so, you know, I mean, I'm saying, and his name's Steve Sacker and he's a great COO and I'm saying his position, but it's really that whole operations team, right?
Sure.
So it's right down to the community manager, the maintenance tech that's on site. I mean, they're the ones there every day. They represent the company and, you know, Steve's mantra and job is to help them get that vision, understand, you know, how we move the needle, how we really stabilize these communities and make them better.
Last question for you. What's been the most challenging part of growing your business to the point that it is today?
It's definitely people, specifically. I mentioned we moved our team from California to Tennessee as part of that. A lot of it was the back office, which is mostly accounting. Pretty much had to start over with our accounting team. That was hard. That was because if there's a close runner up for what's most important at the company, it's the financial side, right? And just, I mean, the loans and investor reporting and taxes and all of that. And so that's been a challenge. And, you know, I'm going to say continues to be a challenge to find good accounting help. And that sort of thing. So yeah, that's probably been the hardest thing.
Well, Sam, this has been a great conversation. I've enjoyed hearing about your backstory and your background and the process that you went through to get to where you're at today, and what you guys have accomplished at Saratoga Group and the company that you've built. It's impressive, and clearly you're doing it the right way, and you have this long-term mindset in play, which serves your tenants and it serves your investors. And it's been great just getting to know you and understanding more about your business. Before I let you go, what's the best way for our listeners to connect with you and learn more about what you guys have going on?
Awesome. And David, by the way, yeah, really appreciated your questioning was awesome. So I'd say probably LinkedIn, just Sam Hales on LinkedIn. You can also email me, sam@saratogagroup.com. So those would be the best ways to get a hold of me.
Great. We'll have that into the show notes at the bottom. So if you're listening right now and you enjoyed the conversation we just had with Sam, go down into the show notes, click on one of those links and connect with Sam and his team. And again, Sam, thank you for coming on. Thanks for sharing your journey with us. And I look forward Awesome. To staying in touch with you down the road.
Thanks, David. Hey, yeah, I really appreciate it.
Hey, before you go, if you and I haven't connected yet, please head on over to KonovoCapital.com. You can join our investor network or download our free passive investor's guide to multifamily syndications. Either way, I'd love to connect with you personally. Also, I just want to thank you for listening to the show and providing feedback and reviews. If you haven't already, please, please, please take a second and leave us a rating and written review. This helps us to be found by new listeners and helps us attract great guests in the future. Thanks again for listening to the show, and I hope you have a great day.